All right, so that was a nice quick break. Just finished talking about the full Azure platform. Now what we're going to do is we're going to start digging deep into each one of the deployment options. We're going to start off first with cloud services. To do that session for us, we're actually going to, I guess it would be satellite sort of kind of, but through the internet, we're going to connect over to Tyler Dirksen, who is actually in his office in Winnipeg, and he'll take us through cloud services. So with that, Tyler, all yours.
My name is Tyler Dirksen, as Jonathan said. Thanks, Jonathan. So what I'm going to be talking about today are the cloud services portion of the Windows Azure services. So I'll just kind of go through basically the cloud services overview. So this is going to be just a quick 30-minute session. So sorry about my speaker here. I couldn't get my stereo speakers working, so hopefully you can still hear me just fine. So this is going to be a quick 30-minute session about Windows Azure Cloud Services, and I don't have enough time, obviously, in 30 minutes to go through a lot of the nuances of exactly what's happening, but hopefully you'll get a good look at the Cloud Services piece and just kind of understand how these services provide a baseline for almost everything that you can do with the other Azure services like websites and virtual machines and other integration points and stuff like that. So without further ado, I'll just kind of continue on here. Why a cloud service? So cloud services is the platform as a service offering for Windows Azure, and what it essentially can provide is a way to just completely put your code onto the cloud without having to worry about the underlying operating system and a lot of that other kind of pain as far as doing upgrades and different things like that. So it's essentially taking the operating system and blow out of the equation and just focusing on your code and on your data. It also gives you the opportunity to build on top of a platform that you can highly automate. It's really neat to be able to build a set of services that will actually scale on demand for you. The load for the services starts increasing, your applications can actually scale themselves rather than you scaling them. So this actually came up in discussion before, but one of the kind of points was, this is kind of a Microsoft platform, but what can it run? What kind of things can you put onto this platform? So even though you are kind of buying into running it on Windows Azure with cloud services, you can do a variety of different things on there, everything from .NET into, you know, other and different things like that. Yeah, so there are a variety of different frameworks that you can run on cloud services, so don't think that you're just going to be stuck with .NET or ASP.NET or anything like that. You can do a variety of different things. So what is a cloud service? So the cloud service platform actually is a combination of two different roles. So you can actually deploy a web role. I'm on mainly the left side, I believe, of the speakers. So I apologize again for the mono audio. So you can actually deploy a web role or a worker role. So a web role is basically code that's hosted on IaaS, and it's you'd primarily use it for ASP.NET or MVC based applications. You can also create a worker role, which is just basically running a set of .NET code, and I'll show you what that code looks like in the demonstration. So without further ado, I'm actually going to build a cloud service in Visual Studio. And I'll flip over to my screen here and get Visual Studio up. So I'll start this from scratch so you can see how I built one up. So if I go to New Project in Visual Studio, this is Visual Studio 2012, with the Windows Azure SDK, you actually have another option on the side to make a Windows Azure cloud service. And so if I pick cloud service and I pick the location of my solution and everything like that and press OK, it starts me off with a nice little cloud service wizard. And this cloud service wizard allows me to basically build up what my service is going to look like. So I have a number of different options for web roles here. You can't really see them, hold on. So I can have an ASP.NET web role, an MVC web role in four free, WCF service web role, things like that. So I'm going to create an ASP.NET web role for kind of my front end request handler. And then in the background, I've got some processing that's happening. So I'm going to put on a worker role to work with that kind of thing. So I'll just press OK on that and zoom out. So right now it's creating my web role and worker role projects. And what it's actually doing is using the regular ASP.NET template. There's nothing special about what's going on here as far as, there's nothing special about what's going on here as far as what kinds of projects these are, these web role and worker role projects. So if I just zoom in here, it's mainly, the web role project is a standard ASP.NET project, and you can kind of replace this with any sort of project. And the worker role project is actually nothing but a class library. It has a class library with a worker role.cs file. Now this is the special project here. So this is the Windows Azure project. And so we have the web role and worker role kind of going. So and a lot of configurations, which I'll go into a little bit later. So this is the actual kind of special component of this piece that actually fits in using the Windows Azure SDK, but everything else is fairly normal. So the only real difference between this web role project and regular ASP.NET is that it has this file, which is a webrole.cs file, which you can actually use to circumvent some of the startup logic and shutdown logic of your Windows Azure machine. So this file doesn't really get used for a web role because you're basically just running on top of IIS. However, for a worker role, this is a little more complex. So there's actually a worker role.cs file on the side here, and I'll see if I can make this a little bit larger. So on the worker role.cs file, I've got a run override, and the run override just has a while true. So this is the basis of how you run your worker application. So it just basically runs this loop until the virtual machine or the process gets killed, and then you're done. So you can take this and create all sorts of things. It's just like if you were actually running your application on a IIS host or a Windows Service host. So if you're thinking about migrating application or trying to figure out what your application would look like in the cloud using cloud services, if you were running a website using ASP.NET or otherwise, then you'd start putting that into a worker role. If you were running a Windows service that actually had to be running all the time and looping through and you manage your own life cycle, basically, of the operations of that application, then you'd be using a worker role. So that being said, I'll just kind of switch back and get into a little bit more detail of what that stuff is all about. So, web role. So, like I was mentioning, the web role actually encompasses all the features of a worker role. Mainly, it has that .cs file. It runs in the same Windows Azure lifecycle, but it actually just runs on top of IIS. So, there's just instead of you starting up your own application, your application is hosted on top of IIS, as well as a number of other things you can do. You can run ASP.NET 3.5 or 4.0, and coming up in the future, it was just on the newsletter, they said they were doing the 4.5 capabilities too with the new operating systems coming out and stuff like that. So you basically need to run the... and also in the chat they're talking about different website capabilities with 4.5 as well, and they probably, hopefully, will go through that, or we can talk about that later when I go through websites. So as well as the ASP.NET up to 4.0 or 4.5 in the future, you can run fast CGI applications. So that gives you the capabilities of running PHP on Windows or Azure services. And you can also create kind of a web worker hybrid by exposing a web endpoint in a worker role or doing some background processing in a web role, because you do have those .cs files, you do have those overrides available to you. Let's see. So let's talk about some of the patterns that you can do with worker roles. Now, worker roles are mainly for long-running processes and different things, so you can actually, they have set up worker roles to actually accept requests over ports and things like that, but lots of times the worker roles will actually listen on some sort of queue or do some background processing and then publish another message to the queue and so on and so forth. So now, let's see. So essentially, what the last kind of point is saying with the external processes is that you're managing your own lifecycle. You're managing your loop, basically. So in the example that's shown when you actually start a new worker role project, it just initially creates a nice little while true loop for you, and you can basically run with that and do any sort of other background threading or whatever you can. But it starts with nothing, and then it allows you to manage your own lifecycle. And some people, when they're doing a web-based application, they don't want to manage their own lifecycle. They just want IIS to manage the thread pools and the requests and the handling and different things like that. But if you are, if you can't just rely on IIS and you want more control over what you're doing, you can kind of drop to a worker role or use a worker role in the background to do some background processing. So now I've been using some kind of fuzzy terms here, like roles and different things like that. Now, how does this relate to the actual hardware of Windows Azure, and how does it actually go onto VMs? So essentially, with roles, you can define your service size, and you can say that this role will require a small instance or an extra small instance or a medium size or whatever instance of on Windows Azure. And all of that is defined in kind of what's called a hosted service file. And I'll go into the different files and stuff like that in the future. But if you want your roles to run on more than one instance, so you can basically say, this is a small instance role, but it actually we need three small instances to be load balanced and things like that. You can do that in a configuration file. So that is more of a runtime change, right? So at compile time or compilation time, you can specify, okay, this role is in a small instance, but at runtime you can say, okay, well now I need more than one small instance of this role running. But each of those instances is actually deployed into a dedicated VM. So even if you have a worker role and you say, I want two worker roles running, it's not just starting two threads on the same VM. Each of those roles actually has its own virtual machine. So this is kind of, when you take the cloud service that I just built, where I had one web role and one worker role, and say I want to kind of scale that out, well, what would that scale out look like? It would look like that, I can say, well, this worker role goes on these three worker role instances. So I can kind of do that animation again. And so at runtime, I basically define what the scale of my application can be. With two web role instances and three worker role instances, but I've already defined what those worker role instances are and how to install them on the machine and different things like that. So the way that I actually define all that stuff is in the configuration files of the roles themselves. So on the side here, if I right-click on my web role, I hit properties of my web role there, or even just double-click on it, I can set all sorts of configurations in Visual Studio here, and I'll kind of zoom in just to see if we can show some of these more clearly. So I can actually set different configuration groups, basically, where I have configurations that are just for when I'm running the code locally, or configurations when I'm running the code in the cloud. But lots of these are kind of global. So this is a couple of the main ones that I was talking about. So you can say, okay, this web role that I'm talking about here actually is deployed with a minimum of two instances. They're not really a minimum, but a starting point of two instances. And I can set a number of different sizes of this machine. But there's a variety of different things going on here, but again, I don't really have time to go into all of them, but what I'm going to do is I can go into settings. And so what I can do here is I can add a runtime setting for my application. So I can call it my setting. And it's a string. And so there's some API in as part of .NET in order to access these settings while your application is running. So I'm just going to switch over to what these configurations may look like. And then I would try that, but unfortunately I don't have a lot of time right now, but we can go into them caching at a later time. So anyway, what I'm going to show you is what this actually looks like on the website. This is the manage.windowsazure.com website, and I've already taken a cloud service and deployed it onto Windows Azure previously, and it looks pretty much exactly the same as that I had before. It was just a basic two-role implementation, but here I actually have a configure tab that I can click on, and I actually have different settings. Like my setting here, where I can change to a certain value and then save, and that actually updates the value on my virtual machine, and I can manage what happens when these settings change, and that kind of thing. But so there are ways to basically handle events in your code as to when these settings change. But the mainly the regular web roles, they just restart essentially, or restart the thread pool for your application. It's very similar if you and then if you change a web web config value. Whereas this is a little bit different than a web config value because you can actually change these at runtime. Whereas the web config file is actually kind of combined in your application and deployed as part of the package. And so you can actually configure them here. You can also scale your instances from here as well without having to do any redeployments or anything like that. So if I wanted to say, okay, my worker role, I've got tons of stuff happening here, so I'm going to scale it up to like 20 instances or up to like maybe 3 instances and stuff like that. So I can save this, and then it's going to start provisioning more worker role and web role instances. So I can scale up and down on the fly as needed. And all of this is also possible using PowerShell and scripting as well, if you wanted to do this more automatically. But it has a very rich user interface and capabilities as far as doing a lot of this stuff. So that was just a brief run through of some of the different kinds of configuration. So I kind of, again, talked about a lot of stuff like doing packaging and breezed over that really, really fast. But I'm just going to go into that in a little more detail. So what actually I did in the previous sample, where I had already kind of put it onto Windows Azure, is I created a project and in Visual Studio, and I compiled that project down to a set of assemblies and websites and a couple things. And then I used Visual Studio to actually one-click publish and package that application to Windows Azure. But what's actually happening in the background is actually creating package files to Windows to deploy to Windows Azure, and it's uploading them for me. But it doesn't eliminate the fact that these operations are actually happening in the background, but it just gives me the capability of doing that with kind of a one-click in Visual Studio. So when I say package and upload, what's actually happening here? There's a couple of different files that are attributed to this kind of thing, and I'll show the screen so that you can read some of this stuff. So when you say I have a small instance and it has these certificates and it uses these worker roles and things like that, that's part of a service definition. That's non-runtime change. So you can't change these settings at runtime. When you provisions a machine, it provisions them with those particular that particular definition, and then it kind of stays that way. Now the alternate to that is a service configuration. So in a service configuration, you have some of the more kind of runtime capable options, the main one being what are the instance sizes and those settings, right, that I was talking about, where you can actually do string-based or connection string-based settings that you can change kind of on the fly. So the service definition is actually kind of combined with your code and to create a CS package file, and it's zipped and encrypted. Well, not really encrypted, it's kind of packaged together, so it can't really be changed after that point until it gets up into the cloud. So when you actually create a Windows Azure cloud service, you're actually combining and saying, okay, this is my CS package, and this is my CS config file. So you actually need two different things when you're creating cloud services. And when you're doing this with Visual Studio, it's it knows a lot of this kind of stuff, and it does all this for you. But if you were to create a new cloud service from scratch using the website, it would ask you and say, okay, well, where's your CS package file, and also where's your CS config file, the one that it's going to start off with. And then after you have a live service, you can change a lot of the CS config kinds of things. Let's see. So this is just a little more of a graphical understanding of what's happening during packaging deployment. So in Visual Studio, I've got my web role and I've got my worker role in my Visual Studio solution. So when I actually compile those kind of things, I get my service artifacts, DLLs, and websites and stuff like that. And as well, I have my assembly model or basically business logic. Those are the things that I've kind of written or created in my application. But then I also have a CS config file sitting beside that that's based off the configurations that I have in the Windows Azure project. So what happens is the model and the service configurations get packaged together in a service package file, and those get uploaded to Windows Azure. And usually through the Windows Azure Blob Storage, it saves those files temporarily before it actually uploads them to the cloud. And the config file actually goes to the compute controller, and the package file goes to the load balancer and to the virtual machines, or behind the load balancer to the virtual machines. So what the compute controller actually defines, different things like what the instance sizes are or how many instances there are and what the load balancer is going to do basically when it receives a request to your application. But then the CS package file is actually what gets installed onto the virtual machines themselves in order to create that service and give it the capability to receive requests or run worker processes. Now, there's a couple of newer things. The integration with Visual Studio has changed a lot since Windows Azure first came out. So it's very, very easy to do rapid build, deploy, and test fix scenario. And you can also do in-place upgrades of your services. You don't necessarily have to do the full, from scratch deployments. You can actually just kind of redeploy new code onto the Windows Azure services. And then the other new kind of thing that you can do with Windows Azure services, cloud services and TFS is doing continuous integration. So right now, out of the box, you can do this with TFS Online or tfspreview.com, but there are a few mechanisms and libraries that you can use to actually change your team build process and your actual build server in order to be able to communicate and deploy to Windows Azure. So even if you're not using tfspreview.com, or even if you're using some other build mechanism like TeamCity or otherwise, there are ways to actually use scripting and libraries to deploy to Windows Azure in an automated process. So there's a few other little nuances that kind of go along with these cloud services. And there are things that I just kind of want to touch on. So one of the things is that you can do startup tasks. And what startup tasks will actually provide you is the ability to kind of install other applications or frameworks onto the machine when it starts up. So this gives you the capability of doing other things like like running Ruby or PHP or other things on these machines that don't natively have those capabilities. And you can also set up in the configurations, and when you're doing deployment in Visual Studio, it's actually really easy to set up remote desktop support, and you have to create a certificate and upload a certificate that sits on the virtual machine to authenticate and communicate using a remote desktop. So even though these machines, you don't really have a lot of access to the operating system from your code, they're still running on an OS. It's not like it doesn't exist. This is not anything other than it's not anything other than Windows right here. Along with that kind of thing, you can actually change a lot of the endpoints, which you can actually use. You can change this in the WindowsAzure.com website now. In previous, it was just through XML, but now you can actually do kind of a graphical change to the endpoints, which we'll see a little bit more of, hopefully, with virtual machines, which highly use the endpoint mappings and stuff like that. Now, I quickly just mentioned a couple of different ways to upgrade this here, and I'll kind of switch over. Let's see if I can switch. There we go. So there's a couple of different ways that you can actually do upgrades with Windows Azure. So what you can actually see in the website is that you have a staging environment right over here. So what that means is that you actually have you can create and provision a set of virtual machines that can sit beside or separate from your production virtual machines that you can deploy to and check if your application is basically online. And now I don't want to kind of mix you up between, you know, what is a staging environment and what is a QA environment, right? This isn't really this is basically to just do a deployment and verify that that deployment occurred properly, and you can basically accept requests before you actually change the load balancer to say, okay, any new requests that you're getting on the external endpoint, now you can route them to this new environment rather than the old environment. And that's what's called a VIP swap, or a virtual IP swap. So the original virtual IP that you are assigned to specify the like where the load balancer is, now that virtual IP is going to be routing traffic to another environment, basically. And so you're swapping the environments out. It really, really helps you keep 100% or close to 100% downtime, because any requests that did get routed to production, even if you've done the VIP swap, the production server is still online. And then you can still, the requests will still be handled and returned properly, and you're not cutting the functionality of that system outright. Now, one of the things you can also do is do an in-place upgrade, which is a little more capable with web roles, because it's running under IIS, and IIS does support, you know, kind of live updating or hot updating. And so you can actually just get Windows Azure to say, rather than create a new machine for this, let's just use the machine that already exists there, and then run whatever process it runs to actually unpackage and deploy the code and your application to that machine. So you can also do an in-place upgrade. So this is primarily what I've got for the Windows Azure virtual machines. And like I said, I did kind of just scratch the surface of a lot of this stuff, and it hopefully will kind of get a little bit of your gears turning, and as far as what you can do with cloud services, then you can kind of think about how you can use cloud services to build your applications rather than kind of already going to some of the other capabilities.